Welcome, friends. Welcome back to Asia Pacific Perspective. I'm your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and this is the monthly program in which we take you for a tour around the Asia Pacific region and all the news that is making headlines in this part of the globe. And of course, to do that, we're joined by our co-host and the founder and webmaster of the Asia Pacific Perspective, APPerspective.net, Brock West, there in Australia. And it has been more than a month since our last episode, but just for those who are interested, we did actually take the time to record an episode late last month, and literally just after hanging up with Brock, my wife went into labor, so that episode was consigned to the dustbin of history. But here we are in mid-May to bring you the latest from the Asia-Pacific region. So Brock, once again, thank you for your time.
James, you know, it's always a pleasure, and let me be the 2,587th person to personally congratulate both you and your wife on the arrival of your son.
Well, I appreciate all 2,587 of those congratulations, so thank you. And again, we have so much to cover in the Asia-Pacific region, just a lot of news taking place right now, and I hope people are staying tuned at APPerspective.net for all the latest. So what have you got up for us this month?
James, we're going to jump right into basically the story that set me on the path to start up APPerspective.net, and that is the upcoming G20 summit. Well, it's in 2014 here in Brisbane, but you know, I think it's really important to keep an eye on what's happening and the developments that are happening. And unfortunately, no surprises. We're definitely seeing the the new technology and the new police powers being already increased and upgraded. You know, so we'll take this story from a local paper here, the Courier Mail. Queensland government considering unprecedented police powers for next year's G20 summit. Unprecedented powers for police to search and arrest anyone inside G20 summit security zones are being considered by the state government. The Courier Mail has told police on terror alert, they also wanted to ban bicycles and items that could interfere with motorcades, such as large placards from protesters. Special technology that allows officers to use mobile phones to collect fingerprints is another measure being considered by the government ahead of next year's G20 summit. James, I saw this story plastered across the front pages of the local paper last weekend, and as I said, although G20 in Brisbane is not till next year in November, it's so very important that people keep their ears and their eyes open now, you know, for these type of developments and announcements, because they're going to start coming thick and fast. And I hope the citizens of Australia, and more importantly, Queensland, where I'm based here, wake up to the passive conditioning that's going on, you know, to allow people to accept the increase in police powers, the crackdown on people who wish to peacefully assemble and protest. And of course, every police department's favorite new toy, surveillance drones. Surveillance drones. We'll also take this from the Courier Mail, which was posted today. Queensland police to use surveillance drones to combat crime ahead of G20 conference. Quote, Queensland police plan to send drones into the sky for bikie and anti-terror surveillance ahead of next year's G20 conference in Brisbane. The $30 an hour drones would also be used for covert drug crop identification, traffic operations, and natural disasters following a successful trial last year. Police Minister Jack Dempsey wants the aircraft, possibly second-hand ex-military drones that have been used in Afghanistan, in time for the transnational G20 conference next year. James, I find it laughable and somewhat saddening at the same time to see, you know, how see-through the agenda is these days. And of course, they're always going to put up whatever flavor of the month bad guy they need to. And right now here in Australia, that's outlaw bikie gangs. Sadly, I've even seen the bombings in Boston being used as justification, you know, for more drones at major events here in Australia. So, as they say, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Unfortunately, right. And I think you hit the nail right on the head when you say the passive conditioning, because I think that that's exactly what we see in the wake and in the preceding stages of all of these major international events now. And unfortunately, the G20 is just like a traveling police state inculcation passive conditioning machine that's going from country to country. So a couple of years ago, of course, it was in Toronto. Of course, we had Pittsburgh before that. Everywhere the G20 goes, basically, we start to see the unfolding of this police state. And more importantly, the rollout of new technologies and new measures, new policing tactics, etc., to really condition the public that this is a police state and you do what we tell you, no matter what the actual law of the land might be. And there were some really disturbing incidents of that coming out of the G20 in Toronto that I've highlighted in my work in the past, where they say, this isn't Canada anymore, your rights under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms don't apply here in downtown Toronto during the G20, etc., etc. Just some absolutely over-the-top tyrannical things. And the most worrying and saddest part of all of this is that so much of the public will, at the very least, just go along with it and not think too much of it. And that's exactly what they're aiming for. They want to make sure that people understand this is just part of the new normal, and that the surveillance drones and whatever they want to roll out next are going to be just part of the everyday humdrum daily routines. And exactly as is noted in that article that you have posted up, after it's successfully deployed at the G20, they'll start using it for just regular policing. Why not? They've got the drones in the sky anyway. Might as well start using them for everyday events. So this is all part of a massive conditioning scheme. We have to snap out of our conditioning to the extent that exists, and more importantly, snap other people out of that. So please, anyone in the Queensland region especially, please start spreading the word about these issues. But people more generally around the world should have their eyes on this and should be decrying it wherever it pops up and rears its ugly head.
Definitely. And just quickly, you know, another way that is being it's being championed and justified here is that I even read an article, which is so ridiculous, was that they're planning on using beer drones at music concerts and music events, you know. So if there's just so insidious in the ways that they're, you know, trying to make these surveillance technologies palatable for the general population. James, we'll move quickly to our second story, as we do have a lot to cover today. This is coming from AlJazeera.com. China's state media praises online exposés. Quote, Chinese state media has praised the power of the internet after an investigation was launched into a high-level state planner following an online exposé, making him the most senior official to be toppled by social media. Liu Tianan, deputy director of the National Development and Reform Commission, is being investigated for serious disciplinary violations, state-run media said on Sunday, after corruption claims emerged earlier online in December. Chinese citizens have taken to internet forums such as the Sina Weibo, a Twitter-like service, in recent years to expose wrongdoing and to vent their anger over Chinese corruption. I found this story really interesting, James, because it's almost an urban legend now how much of a vice-like grip the Chinese government seems to have over what its citizens can or cannot do on the web. And if you do take this story on face value, it does seem to bode well for potential online activism and dissent in China. However, I think both you and I kind of agree that seeing as even like the Chinese state-run media has come out in favor of this expose, maybe this online outrage could very well have been allowed to happen as so to make the Xi Jinping regime look like it's cracking down on, the now generational corruption that plagues the Chinese political system.
I think that's a very astute analysis. That's what my money is on in this case anyway. We know that, as you say, corruption is kind of the bugbear of Chinese politics, and it's quite infamous that, surprise, surprise, in this communist utopia where everyone's a comrade, it just happens to be the ones in the party leadership, at least at the local level, who seem to get all of the rewards of that and live the lavish lifestyles. So it is, in a country where the internet is so closely surveilled and so closely cracked down on through keyword surveillance and all the other abuses of the Great Firewall of China, it's obvious that when they allow Weibo and other services to spread information about corrupt local officials, it is a type of steam valve. They, I think the party leadership in Beijing are happy to encourage that type of corruption hunting on the local level to get rid of the expendable lower level officials. But you're never going to see that happening, I think, at the upper reaches of power in Beijing. And that's, I think that pretty much speaks for itself what this is really about. But I think you're right. This is a lot about optics and about Xi Jinping and his new premiership trying to look like they're cracking down on corruption and at least give people that kind of steam valve of release so that they have that feeling that they can, you know, hold the corrupt politicians accountable.
Yeah, you can just imagine how quickly, you know, any kind of real online grassroots activism that actually, you know, really did challenge the status quo there in China would be so swiftly, you know, crushed and pretty much, you know, wiped off the face of the earth. It wouldn't be funny. James, we'll move into our third and final stories. We're going to try to explore the whole Asia-Pacific region in one fell swoop here. The first story comes from StratRisk.com, the always invaluable StratRisk.com. Japan PM warns of possible military response to Chinese subs. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said Tuesday, Tokyo could mount a military response if foreign submarines enter its territorial waters while underwater, as Japan and China continue squabbles over the islands. Abe's comment came after Japan's defense ministry said a submerged vessel was spotted in the contiguous waters, 12 nautical mile strip outside the disputed waters, near one of Japan's Okinawa Islands from late Sunday to early Monday. We'll move on to our second story, James. These are all water and naval-related articles from Press TV. South Korea and the US to launch two-day naval exercise amid regional tensions. The US and South Korea have launched a two-day naval exercise in the waters around the Korean Peninsula amid regional tensions. The military exercise began on Monday at South Korea's southern port city of Busan. The US Navy said in a statement that the naval forces in the two countries would take part in integrated flight operations, air defense events, surface warfare training events, precision ship maneuvers, and liaison officer exchanges. The statement added that the drill, which included the 97,000-ton USS Nimitz, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, along with a number of other warships, guided missile cruisers, and guided missile destroyers. And for our third story, James, Taiwan threatens Philippines with sanctions. This is from Al Jazeera. Government issues an ultimatum to Manila following a fatal shooting of Taiwanese fishermen in the disputed waters. Taiwanese government has issued a 72-hour ultimatum to the Philippines government demanding an apology over the fatal shooting of a Taiwanese fisherman. The Taiwanese Coast Guard on Sunday dispatched four vessels to guard the disputed waters where the shooting incident took place. Now, James, the reason, you know, so much is happening so quickly here now in the Asia Pacific, and, you know, we pretty much have to kind of condense all these stories, but it seems every other week now that there's some other new squabble or further increase in tensions in the waters of the Asia Pacific. And with the US continuing to deploy more and more of its naval arsenal into the region, and not to mention the increased amount of military drills we're seeing, one can't help but feel that it's not if, but now when we're going to see one of these bilateral tensions escalate into something more severe. Your thoughts?
Exactly right. There are bilateral tensions all across the board that start to create sort of a mesh of interlocking tensions that really do seem to be the flashpoint. We do talk about the water territorial disputes, it seems, every month, but that's because it truly is the flashpoint of the Asia-Pacific region. And when and if military tensions really start to escalate, it's almost certainly going to be some type of naval tensions in some of these disputed waters. So it is important that we keep our eyes on these tensions. And some of this is kind of same old, Japanese-Chinese disputes, U.S.-Korean naval exercises, that type of thing. Taiwan-Philippines tensions is interesting because, you know, supposedly they're on the same side of the U.S. Military and naval umbrella. So it's interesting to see some of the tensions within some of the ASEAN members and other places as well that we shouldn't neglect, because that is, if that's supposed to be a bulwark against China's growing naval tensions, then tensions within that that bulwark itself is going to be problematic for that. Again, a lot of different tensions and disputes taking place, and probably the only way to really keep up with it is to keep up with APPerspective.net, because I know you're keeping an eye on all of those types of disputes. But again, I just want people to keep an eye on the naval tensions in particular, because I really think that that is going to be the future flashpoint for this region, and especially as we see, for example, in recent weeks, China officially admitting they're working on building a second aircraft carrier, and also they recently deployed an anti-aircraft weapon in on their southern coast facing Taiwan. Both pretty huge moves, and only signs of the further increasing in naval tensions that's going on here. So something we definitely have to keep our eye on.
Absolutely, James. And yeah, I think it's definitely the waters around the Asia Pacific are going to be the powder keg. And, you know, as you said, you know, people can stay tuned to APPerspective.net for all the latest updates on the disputed islands and waters and territories, and but also, you know, the growing police state and trade and so much more. So, James, I think we'll have to leave it there for this month. Looking forward to doing it again in June.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And I'll talk to you next month.
See you then, mate. Take care.